I will begin with questions. What kind of questions might there be since the time we were last together? Could be about anything. I don't know how to fix cars, so don't ask me about that. If you had a problem with your car, I can't help you. But I can refer you to someone who can. How's that? Not only that, I'll give you their phone number and write it down on a post-it note. A full-service organization.
Well, this is a little bit of a precursor to what you were talking about a minute ago, and personal peace and psychological well-being. And that is, can you talk a little bit about the importance of afflictive emotions and thoughts and experiences, and how these are the key resting in these particular phenomena, situations, or thoughts or emotions are the absolute key. There's no shortcut, but just the resting as awareness in those particular circumstance.
Mm-hmm. That's a good starting point. In order to be an optimal leader, in other words, the best leader we can possibly be, it requires that we have perfect mental stability. So it is impossible to have optimal leadership without perfect mental stability. And when we look at what leadership is, leadership comes in many different forms. For example, in our own lives, we're leaders of ourselves. So we have to provide leadership to ourselves as individuals in order to live in the world. And in order to provide that leadership to ourselves, we need to know who can best contribute to us. So, you know, we want to accept appropriate leadership from others. We need to be able to know how to identify leaders that have knowledge in fields that we might want to have. And so unless we have found within ourselves the ability to lead ourselves, we can't know who else to rely on. You know, we need to, when we know, for example, that the purpose of the mind and the body is to benefit ourselves and benefit others, that's key. If we know just that, that the purpose of human life is to benefit others and to benefit us, then we have a starting point. And 'cause then we can ask, well, how can my mind and body be in this condition where it can be of optimal benefit? And once we ask that question, we can start to know where to look to bring about an optimal mind that will be the starting point for optimal action. If we don't know that, then we don't have a starting point at all. So you see, once we start to look into the nature of the mind, if we really look thoroughly and we know where to look for people to contribute to us, then we will come to understand and recognize that perfect mental stability is the reality, that it is an achievable reality, that it can be brought to a definitive conclusion. And so you see, for most human beings, the idea that that's possible is not even considered, and it's very, very remote. It's very rare today that people have perfect mental stability, yet perfect mental stability is achievable, and indeed it is the future of all leadership. So say 25 years from now, unless a person has perfect mental stability, they won't be chosen for leadership positions. And along with that, more and more people who are workers in key areas of society will not be able to get jobs in those areas without perfect mental stability. So you see, this that seems rare now is going to very quickly become more easily achievable. And the way in which it's going to become achievable is through a system like the Brilliant system that we're offering, and that is a project of this collaborative mind of what we call Brilliant. Now, the only reason that this has not been achievable before within human culture is that there have not been any kind of specific systems that lead to it as a definitive result. The systems themselves have been ill-defined and vague. And when a system is ill-defined and vague, an educational system, which is what this is, then it's impossible to produce a result. Results are produced through systems that are well-defined and have methodologies that lead to a particular result. Now, when it comes to our own mind, most of us have learned that the only way we can have a mind that's easy to get along with is to manage our emotions. So what most of us end up as are micromanagers of our thinking and our emotions. And all of the energy of our day is spent managing our thoughts and emotions. But this is a suboptimal level of leadership of ourselves. Because you see, if we're trying to vet all of our emotions and thoughts to decide which ones to keep and which ones to get rid of, then most of the energy of our life goes into that. Yet it isn't necessary at all to do that in order to be optimally intelligent. It isn't necessary to do that at all, yet that goes against everything we've ever learned. We've learned we have to do that, we must do that, that we must really contrive a sense of well-being in order to get along in the world. Yet ultimate well-being is the kind of well-being that doesn't need to do anything about thoughts and emotions that appear. Thoughts and emotions that appear are just the dynamic energy of intelligence itself. And one way of dealing with that intelligence is to try to manipulate the dynamic energy to make it into some form of well-being. But it's not the optimal way of being. The optimal way of being is to let all the dynamic energy of thoughts and emotions be as it is. And when that is allowed to be the case, then it opens up the floodgates of another kind of intelligence that is available once we stop micromanaging thoughts and emotions. And so, you see, micromanaging thoughts and emotions takes a tremendous amount of energy. It takes a tremendous amount of life force. And it's based on an activity of tension and all hypervigilance, always looking at everything that's going on within oneself and being self-aware, consciously or unconsciously, and either avoiding negative states that come up or replacing them with some other state or indulging them, one of those three. However, in simply not doing anything when they appear, it opens up a resource of profound wisdom, of profound insight, of profoundly skillful activity. And this type of leadership is spontaneous leadership. It's spontaneous leadership that occurs on the fly. It's the kind of leadership that can, whether it's of ourselves as individuals or as groups of people, that allows things to happen fluidly and often to go off in unplanned ways that deliver much better results. So even though we might have a plan for our life or a business plan, unless we have flexibility within that plan, we won't be able to achieve optimal results. We have to be able to see clearly, to have a kind of lucid clarity that allows for opening up to new directions that may be more beneficial than the directions we had planned. Now, a simple way to look at this would be that, say, this book was a dividing line, and on one side of this dividing line we had micromanaging all the thoughts and emotions and micromanaging all our actions on a moment-to-moment basis. And so as long as we're on this side of the dividing line, we have of micromanaging all these natural activities of a human being, our intelligence is limited to this arena over here. It can't ever go over to this side because it's too involved in an energetic field that involves just managing, micromanaging thoughts and emotions and the activities of daily life. However, once we let all those thoughts and emotions be as they are, then we're able to gradually push down this seeming barrier that was never there. And what it opens up is a vast expanse of intelligence that we didn't even know was there. So then we're suddenly able to see a wide range of solutions that have never existed before. Now, as all of you here know, our project of the Brilliant Collaborative Mind has been to take on big problems that were considered unsolvable and find solutions to those problems. And so we took on a number of projects initially. One was that we were determined to define psychological well-being, and then also to develop a methodology for bringing it about as a result. And so we took on that problem and we actually solved it. We didn't just have a vision about it, we actually defined psychological well-being, developed a methodology, and proved it as a result by showing that anyone who adopted that method could have psychological well-being. Now, another area that we entered into was the whole topic of enlightenment. 56.3% of the world's people grow up in cultures where the cultural philosophy is non-dual. And the goal of non-dual philosophy is a state of being called enlightenment. Now, what is enlightenment? Well, enlightenment is a state of self-awareness in which there is complete mastery over all thoughts and emotions, as well as the power to be of immediate and profound benefit in all situations. So that's what it is, in a very simple nutshell. And throughout all of time, there have been systems of one kind or another focused on bringing enlightenment about, the goal of non-dual philosophy. Yet there really isn't any kind of system that's germane to this particular era. So our project was to, first of all, define enlightenment, which I just did, and secondarily to bring about a methodology for achievement of that as a result within all the world's people. So not just the 56.3% who are interested in enlightenment, but anyone who might want to bring that about. And so this is something that was considered a formerly unsolvable problem. If someone was looking for enlightenment, they really didn't know where to go. You know, there were, let's go here, there, and everywhere and try to find it. And so now people do know where to go increasingly to bring that about as a demonstrated result. And then, of course, in working on these projects, we needed to have some kind of collaborative work process for our group working together worldwide that could achieve these kinds of results for big projects. So on the fly, we developed this incredible collaborative process that everyone delights in. And so all of us working together on a worldwide basis, we all agree this is that we never knew there was anything like this possible. That it was not only possible to take on big projects that most people in the world considered undoable, find solutions to these problems quickly, swiftly, and surely, and not only find the solutions, but bring them out to the public, bring them out to the end user so they could be used in an easy and effortless way, where there would be complete transparency and a high degree of success. And so you see, it just shows that within the individual intelligence and also within the collaborative intelligence, that when this no longer is in the way, there is an immense resource available to solve all kinds of problems. Not just the problems we've solved so far. Those are just the first problems on our list of problems we're interested in solving. But you see, these three that we've solved so far are key to solving the rest. Because the solution to the challenges of the planet and its inhabitants can only come about by tapping into this really profound resource that we as human culture are just beginning to have confidence in. Now, many of us learn that afflictive states, afflictive emotions, and afflictive thoughts are something scary, that there's something that we need to manage, or somehow they're going to overwhelm us and we will become a raving maniac. That's what most of us fear. So in order to avoid being a raving maniac, we do what has been role modeled to us by other human beings, and what other human beings role model to us, in other words, our caretakers, our parents, our educational institutions, and other institutions, that they role model to us that we have to micromanage these troublesome thoughts and emotions, or else we'll all end up as raving maniacs. Hasn't that happened anyway? hasn't there been an increase of raving maniacs according to this method? Well, you know, when we examine the effectiveness of a method, we see what kinds of results it's produced. So we see that micromanaging thoughts and emotions through all of these different means, well, it's kind of ended up with more raving maniacs. So what that points out is that it isn't working. So you see, what we want to do is have something that works. We don't want to repeat the same thing over and over again, because in repeating the same thing over and over again, we'll just end up with the same result. And that's really the definition of insanity, repeating the same thing over and over again, and always ending up with the same abysmal result. So we want to go beyond everything we've ever known and see what else is out there. What else is out there in the vast expanse of mind? What else is out there in the vast expanse of all-encompassing intelligence that can really help us out in a practical way, all of us together, united together in a global democratic human community? And the greatest power we have in that regard is within ourselves. That's where it's located. It's within ourselves. And it doesn't come from trying to subdue or subvert or refine negative thoughts and emotions. So what we've learned is not correct. What we've learned is not correct. It's one way of being, but it's not an optimal way of being. And so when we take on this project of opening up to this really super excellent, super complete intelligence that was that is within us, very often it might seem like an enormous challenge to just let afflictive thoughts and emotions be as they are. But it's only in allowing them to be as they are that we see that they spontaneously self-release within intelligence. They're not independent of intelligence. It's intelligence that is their only power. It's the supreme unifying intelligence that is their only power. They don't have any kind of individual self-generated power of their own. And when we identify with the intelligence rather than with the thoughts and emotions, we see that they vanish naturally in and of themselves, like the flight path of a bird in the sky, or like a line drawn in water, or like mist evaporating in the air. It would be impossible to hold on to them if we wanted to. And by the same virtue, we don't need to push them away, not either one. And so you see, this kind of turns our apple cart upside down in terms of everything we've learned. But what it allows for us to do is enter into a realm of complete spontaneity and extremely powerful intellectual freedom and emotional freedom, where not only do we become commanding, radiantly confident leaders of ourselves and our own being, but of others as well. Because you see, there's nothing greater that we have to teach another human being than what we've learned about ourselves. So when we within ourselves can train ourselves to have complete mastery over all mental and emotional states and to enter into this realm of spontaneous leadership that guarantees immediate benefit and long-term benefit, then we really have something to teach someone else. And this is going to be a burgeoning arena in all areas of human activity in the next 25 years. It really is the future of science, technology, and all other fields of endeavor. It won't be, even though we'll have incredible advances, technological advances. You see, technological advances, these are just extensions of ourselves. They're not something else. They're part of this unified intelligence as well. It's just that as human beings, we can innovate all kinds of wonderful forms of this intelligence. But the technologies we create are all manifestations of this unifying intelligence as well. So when we, as the creators of that technology, are operating at an optimal level, we're able to create technologies that are optimal technologies. If we're still just micromanaging everything in our thoughts and emotions and in our business activities and all other activities on this side of the barrier, then we may think we're coming up with tremendous advances, but they're nowhere near the kinds of advances we can come up with when this barrier is no longer there. So some of the areas that where we want to go as human beings are inaccessible to us until we can really exercise this optimal intelligence. And that's just the way it is. And, you know, we can continue to look for solutions forever, but we will make progress at a snail's pace unless this barrier can come down. When this barrier comes down, we suddenly start to see all kinds of things we never saw before. And these are solutions that come about in an effortless flow of collaboration between, well, I'll use as an example, business and their customers. An effortless flow of communication between business and their customers, or between organizations and their end users. This is a collaboration that occurs when there are no barriers in the way and no positions to take. It's only then that there can be a flow of communication that allows for all the technologies of the organization to come to an optimal level and actually serve the needs of the customer, the end user. And so, you know, this is an exciting and thrilling time, because we as human beings can see many projects that we really want to take on. So many of us want solutions. We want solutions to all kinds of things. We want to know how to innovate artificial intelligence, or we want to know how to innovate global democratic community, or we want to know how to innovate environmental restoration, or we want to know how to innovate world peace, or healthcare for all people, or education for all people, or food or water for all people, or shelter for all people. We want to know how to do these things, and all these answers are already available within the great intelligence that unifies everything. So this knowledge is already available, but it's not available as long as we're continuing to micromanage thoughts and emotions, and as long as we believe that that's what intelligence is, that we're believing that intelligence comes from micromanaging thoughts and emotions, but that isn't the case. We believe that leadership is contrived, that it comes from contriving actions and acting in a certain way and making sure our thoughts and emotions are regulated. Mm-hmm. We can't open up to true innovation if we continue to think in that way. In other words, the thinking that created the problem can't solve the problem. And so in some areas, we see that even though we have made tremendous advances, like in artificial intelligence, really in the last 40 years, it's only progressed at a snail's pace compared to where we as human beings want to go with artificial intelligence. Or if we look at the project, for example, of world peace or restoration of the environment, with these two, even though it seems we've made advances, we've been progressing at a snail's pace compared to how we can progress. If we as a global human family take on this project of really getting familiar with what we're capable within the expanse of their mind. Now, you see, I can talk about this with tremendous authority and conviction because I've been part of the group that has solved these problems that were formerly unsolvable. You see, that's why I have authority and conviction. That's why I have such confidence, because I've actually seen this come about. And I've seen that these problems that we have solved are the key to solving the other problems. We as human beings are the ones who come up with the solutions to these problems. We're already expressions of the unifying intelligence by which everything comes about. Because we're expressions of that, all of its knowledge is already contained within us. So when a new discovery is made, it's not an invention that's come from somewhere else. It's already available in this intelligence. It's just that now we can see it for the first time. Why can we see it? Because this barrier isn't there any longer. It's disappeared. See, there never was a barrier. And that's what we realize. when we go beyond the ideas that we've had about ourselves. So isn't this exciting?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, what could, in a more practical way, what could be a greater relief than to stop trying to fix ourselves? And by stop trying to fix ourselves, we find there's something about us that is completely amazing, that is so powerful, so effective, so efficient in every action of living, that is able to be in any circumstance without impediment. And all this comes about when we stop trying to fix ourselves and just allow everything to be as it is. Even if we can just hesitatingly approach such a way of being, do it anyway. Do it anyway. If it seems scary or like you're gonna go stark raving mad if you just allow all your thoughts and emotions to be as they are, just do it anyway. It only happens one thought and emotion at a time. So you'll be able to test the waters to see if what I'm saying is true. You'll be able to see, well, what's more effective? Indulging anger or trying to fix it up or replace it with something else, or just letting it vanish naturally in and of itself while you identify with awareness, while you identify with this intelligence that is aware, conscious, and is the basis of everything. That's the most important choice. The most important choice in every moment is this choice to identify with intelligence that is the root, the source, the mainstay and origin of all expression, or to identify with the expression itself. There are only those two choices. And the more we identify with that intelligence, the more the powers of it are evident in our life. It's as simple as that. You know, when we look at the unifying intelligence that is the source of everything, when we just look around us, we can see that it is entirely spontaneous by nature. It is completely spontaneous by nature, yet everything coheres perfectly. Everything perfectly coheres. And so there's no need within this unifying intelligence to try to micromanage any of the activity within it. The activity within it just goes on as it does, but all the while the power is in the intelligence itself. It's not in the activity. The activity has no independent power. It's just the dynamic energy of that intelligence. So that intelligence is spending no time whatsoever trying to get rid of negative states, whether they're macrocosmic or microcosmic, or trying to encourage positive states, whether they're macrocosmic or microcosmic. The job of the unifying intelligence is just that, unification. It's the super complete unification of everything, the unified field. So its power is in that. It's not in trying to engage in a war of getting rid of certain types of states within it and encouraging others. Isn't where its power is. And so you see, whether we're talking about this on a philosophical scale or we're talking about it on a deeply personal scale in terms of the way we live our individual daily lives from activity to activity, when we identify with this intelligence, we find a way of being that, in one word, it's thrilling, it's exciting. It's a resource where we're no longer involved in any kind of self-focus. The self-focus falls away, And the entire focus is the focus of the benefit of all. And this focus of benefit of all is completely uncontrived. It's not something we have to try to do or try to make come about. It's just the way it is. It's like a swollen river in summer. It just flows forcefully as it does into the sea. And so you see, even if you're just at the very beginning of allowing everything to be as it is within yourself and allowing all your thoughts and emotions to just be as they are while you identify with this intelligence, while you just maintain intelligence, relax as this intelligence. If you're just at the very beginning of that, immediately you'll see its power. You will see its power because you will see that there's nothing that need be done about these thoughts and emotions. And that is pure intelligence, seeing that there's nothing that need be done. These thoughts and emotions will resolve themselves. They're forever self-freeing, self-releasing, and self-resolving. And the immediacy of their self-resolution becomes more and more obvious the more you're identified with optimal intelligence. It's just the way it is. And you know, in that, you enter into a great freedom because you're not afraid of anything. There's no longer any situation to be afraid of, because you know wherever you are, there you are. And wherever you are, that unifying intelligence is. And it cannot be affected by anything. And so you learn this in your own personal experience by training yourself to identify with awareness, to identify with this most important intelligence rather than to identify with its expressions. Now, in this way, the way in which you think to solve problems really becomes extraordinary. Because first of all, this kind of thinking does not come from obsessive darting about from thought to try to solve problems. It comes from a clear space of intelligence where you might think of a problem like psychological well-being or food for all the world's people, wonderful nourishing food that people want to eat for all the world's people. And so just you think about a problem like that, and then without thinking any further, solutions start to appear. Incredible solutions that have never existed before. And you see this in a directly collaborative way with other human beings, where you know exactly who to talk to and what kind of information to engender in order to make that solution come about. So you see, when for example, if we talk about leadership in the area of serving all the people of the world with excellent food, or we talk about leadership in terms of everyone in the world achieving psychological well-being, that can't be done without talking to the people of the world. See, there has to be a collaborative communication flow. And so this is what came about for us when we developed this model for psychological well-being. We could have all the ideas about psychological well-being, publish all kinds of materials, but unless we went out there all over the world talking to people on every continent, talking to them about their daily lives and their own emotions and thoughts and and how they deal with those on a daily basis, and also asking them what was important to them in order to live a happy and successful life, and then developing materials in a collaborative flow with everyone, and then revising those materials on the fly as needed to be customizable and scalable for any particular group we're talking to. Well, you see, that's the only way that there can be a model for psychological well-being that applies to all the world's people. It can't just apply to people in the West and then you take it out and try to paste it onto everyone else's reality. It's not like that. From the vast intelligence, everything happens on the fly. So even though there is a model for psychological well-being, when materials are published, they're customizable and scalable to any particular audience. This is just the way it is. But you see, from the effortless intelligence, how do you think that happens? It happens effortlessly. So even though there may be a lot of activity going on, deadlines and incredible projects being realized, it all happens effortlessly and without tension among the work group. Now, who could ask for more than that? You know, we've all seen plenty of work groups that are threaded with tension, or at least some tension. But how about a work group with no tension, where their tension isn't a prerequisite to delivering a result? Now, sometimes we've tricked ourselves to believe that tension is a prerequisite for results, but it's not. It isn't at all. Within us, we have the flow of profound intelligence in which there is no effort, and in which there is a profound ability to lead and be led. You know, what is intelligence? And this is a topic I've talked about and thought about forever. And it's just so clear that there is a conventional kind of giftedness or brilliance that fits within the parameters of convention, no matter how brilliant it may be. And then there's an altogether different type of intelligence that is a giftedness that is beyond the scope of anything that's known. And so the one of the primary benefits of training the mind in optimal intelligence is that it allows for this kind of brilliance, this kind of intelligence that is completely beyond anything that's ever been known, that can innovate entirely new systems or ways of doing things that help the planet and its inhabitants enormously. And so when I listened to those talks, it reminded me of that. Because I, you know, it just seems like, and this is something I've always noticed, and really, it's something that my mother inspired in me. I was an intellectual from the moment I was born, and I had many intellectual arguments about everything. And my mother said, well, anyone can argue and complain, but few people can make a difference. And so, you know, I'm always listening through my mother's ears when I listen to intellectual arguments. It's just like the most poignant understandings can be espoused verbally. But if they don't have any kind of follow-through that really brings them into some kind of a focus that is of immediate benefit and long-term benefit to the planet and its inhabitants, then they're just, you know, they fall flat, really. there may be important things to hear, but it's much more important to be able to do what one talks about than to just talk about it. And of course, being someone who grew up in the hippie era, so to speak, and in the era of making peace rather than making war, and really having that as a focus of one's ideals. One of the things I saw very early is that people couldn't even make peace within themselves, many of the people espousing these ideals. They had no personal peace. They had no personal psychological well-being. They had not brought their own thoughts and emotions into a peaceable state. Thus, it was impossible for them to ever concoct some kind of grand scheme that would bring about world peace, no matter how much they wanted it. So no matter how passionate someone is about their ideals, and especially ideals about peacemaking, it's impossible to bring that about unless the person espousing those ideals has a profound sense of personal peace themselves, no matter how brilliant their ideas may be. Because the scope of their vision does not have the reach and range to come up with a grand scheme. It's impossible. As long as there's all kinds of unresolved emotional issues and mental issues, it's impossible to come up with truly profound activities that can be of benefit to many people. No matter how great the projects may be, their greatness can be increased exponentially just by the powers of the mind and increasing the powers of the mind. And of course, the way that's demonstrated or evidenced in any individual person is in their mastery over mental and emotional phenomena. If there isn't mastery over mental and emotional phenomena, it's impossible to enter into the greatness of one's own intelligence. It's absolutely impossible. It's like a tremendous barrier that can't be penetrated as long as that's the case. So I know in terms of my own life and process and in observing others, what I see is that in my own life I only became capable of great projects when I had achieved complete mastery over all emotional and mental phenomena. Before that, I did accomplish a great deal, but I couldn't even see what was possible in terms of my scope of activities until there was complete mastery over all emotional and mental phenomena.